This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and it is just past midnight here in Japan, so it's technically the 2nd of October 2010 somewhere in the world. Today I'm joined on the line by Richard Andrew Grove of Tragedy and Hope, Jan Irving of Gnostic Media, and Paul Verge of Divergent Films. Guys, thanks so much for coming on the Corbett Report today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for asking. Happy to be here. Mark Westgren.
All right. Well, it's the first time we've had Jan and Paul on the program, so perhaps we should start with a little bit of introduction. Jan, let's start with you and Gnostic Media. Tell us a little bit about your background and what you do over there.
Oh, goodness. Well, where should I start off at? I run the Gnostic Media podcast, as well as I've authored a couple of books and produced the DVD, The Pharmacratic Inquisition, and we're constantly cranking out new media and finding new and undiscovered ways of bringing down the New World Order, which I suppose is what this talk is all about.
It certainly is. Excellent. And Paul, how about Divergent Films?
Basically started my activism about 7 years ago when I got held at the border and finally decided to make a film after visiting New York in 2006, and that ended up being Hijacking Humanity. I also work with a group here in Vancouver called Think Free, which does a lot of legal advocacy work. And since meeting Rich and Jan, just been taking on a larger number of projects, trying to break down exactly what's going on in the world into smaller, digestible, bite-sized chunks that people can understand. And that made us naturally gravitate towards you.
Excellent. Well, that helps in defeating the New World Order, I think. So that's always welcome. And finally, we have Richard Grove of Tragedy and Hope, who I'm sure my listeners might be familiar with by now. But Rich, tell us a little bit about Tragedy and Hope.
Well, as a ex-corporate employee, I like to do art now. I like to communicate what I've learned, and I like to do research before I communicate, rather. And I like to make art with my friends who are also trying to, you know, learn something and make it knowledgeable, and then in a succinct and eloquent way express this to a larger audience so that we can help address some of these pre-existing problems that most of us have inherited and some of us have just been born into recently. But these things aren't what we created for ourselves. They're problems of the status quo, the way things are, the way the profit structures and power structures were set up pre-existing to our birth into this world. So it's few and far between people who are willing to just go do what they see needs to be done and not wait for someone to pay for them. And you being one of the few, James, I've enjoyed your podcast and over the past several years have learned a great deal more about things that I thought I'd already researched and kind of studied and had a good grasp on. So I find it a very good opportunity every week to sit down and listen to whatever you've put out, because it helps me sharpen my understanding, because I'm not so much interested, I'm not so much interested in being right now as I am improving my perspective and learning as much as I can from anybody who takes enough care to think about these things and to put some critical thought into expressing how they think about these things. I think we can all learn from that. So that's basically what Tragedy and Hope is about. It's about bringing different artists, independent artists who don't use commercials or other types of media persuasion. It's about maintaining your free volition and learning how to make good judgments as a process of critical thinking. So James, we're proud to have you part of it, as well as James Pilato from Media Monarchy and a couple other people that, across 6 billion people on the planet, there's less than 10 of us that I can see that are kind of doing the same thing and seeing the same things from different perspectives. And I see a lot of synergy in being able to cross-pollinate what we've learned among our different audiences, because I think anyone who's just listened to one of us has, only gotten a part of the picture. And it's by blending all these perspectives and adding the knowledge and, more importantly, having a filter through which you can take the non-fact out and the illusions out and be left with factual and actual pieces of information that you can take meaningful action on. That's what Tragedy and Hope is all about.
Well, that's right, and it does represent a collaborative process through which I think learning always takes place, and that's why it's so important to be a part of it and exciting to be a part of it. And I guess the reason that we're gathered here today is, as many of my listeners might be aware, I'm about to come out with episode 150 of the Corbett Report, talking about how to defeat the New World Order, which is a question that's obviously calculated to be as wide as possible, so that people have some room in defining and conceptualizing the terms and approaching it from different angles. So since it's always important to define the terms before we start talking about any concept, I think we have to define what terms we're talking about here. And the operative words to me seem to be defeat and New World Order, both of which I think leave quite a bit of room for interpretation. So why don't I throw that out? What are we talking about today? What is the New World Order and how do we defeat it? And I throw that out to anyone who wants to start.
I'd like to start by suggesting that Jan define one word before we even talk about freeing ourselves of the New World Order, because it's this one word, liberal or liber, freedom, that hinges upon all this. This is what we're looking for. So let's get an idea of where we're trying to get to before we try to route an escape plan.
Well, James, let me start out by asking you what you think of typically when you first think or hear the word liberal.
That's a good question. I guess I have two different takes on it. I think the first knee-jerk response, since I grew up in Canada, where the Liberal Party has been the dominant political force for many years, is to think of it in the left side of the left-right political spectrum. But of course, the other side is talking about classical liberalism, which is very much different and goes back to the idea of basically not that everyone is free to do what they will as long as it does not interfere with anyone else.
Well, let me read you some definitions of what the word liberal means from a few different dictionaries. And I'm going to start off with the Webster's International Dictionary from 1893. And it says the word liberal means free by birth, hence befitting a free man or gentleman. Free. And it also, I'm going to skip down to the Oxford English Dictionary, which is the world's largest English dictionary. And it says worthy of a free man, directed to general intellectual enlargement and refinement. Free. Free from narrow prejudice, open-minded. Free from bigotry or unreasonable prejudice in favor of traditional opinions or established institutions, open to the reception of new ideas or proposals of reform, opposed to conservative. And what I always like to do when I talk about the word freedom is, I mean the word liberal, is also give the antonyms of the word liberal so that people can understand exactly what the opposite of the word liberal would actually be. And of course, the definitions that I've just read of liberal are very much different from what most people are used to hearing. They're used to hearing it. People who want to tax and spend us, take all of our freedoms away, communists, things like that. But that's actually not what a liberal is. And the antonyms are uneducated, unintellectual, closed of heart, selfish, narrow, contracted, small, fascist, racist, bigoted, homophobic, stingy, close-minded, supportive of monarchies and slavery, against freedom of religious expression and speech, low in birth and mind. And since this is supposed to be a free country, it would be anti-American. And the word liberal comes from the Latin word liber, which is book. And that's where we get the seven liberal arts from, and libraries and things like that. And a liberal education is the seven liberal arts, and that's composed of the trivium and the quadrivium. And to summarize it very quickly, the trivium is grammar, logic, and rhetoric, specifically in that order. And the quadrivium is math, geometry, music, and astronomy. So that's what we wanted to talk about today, because if you know this information, this is how they run the operating system to control everybody's minds. This is the mind control system, the trivium.
All right, well, I'm interested to hear more about it. So where do we start from here?
Okay, so If you want to understand how they control you, you have to understand the processes by which they control you in order to become free. And a lot of becoming free has to do with reading books, which is why the Latin word for book and free is liber. So the whole idea of using books to become free is ancient, and not so much to become free as the elites have done, where they've become free at our expense. But in order to be able to introduce equilibrium into this process, we have to understand exactly what they're doing and how they have such a edge on the competition. What are they doing to cheat? Well, what they've done to cheat is they've suppressed this methodology or system of critical thinking that they use to get consistent, good judgments on their behalf, meaning that they get what they want. They're getting their goals. And when we're doing it on the flip side, like, you know, we've been looking into 9/11 now for 9 years. And still, there is a large part of the public that denies that anything, you know, they think the New World Order is a conspiracy theory. Okay, so the problem with that is there's hundreds or thousands of years of history on this concept of New World Order. Why don't most of the public understand that this exists? Like, there's a problem right there, that there's something existent that they deny its existence without looking at it. That seems some sort of operant conditioning, a conditioned emotional reaction, which is the opposite of critical thinking, right? So in going into define the New World Order, you have this concept of people wanting to control other people. Now, the old world order was this being done through physical aggression and coercion. But that takes a lot of manpower and a lot of expense and a lot of things that they said, hey, we can control people like this, but there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a more efficient way. So if control through the old world order is a big circle, then control through the new world order is a smaller circle inside that circle, representing more effective, efficient ways to control more people with using less resources. And the way that the new world order started doing this was through words, using words and persuasive speech and fallacies, which are, you know, hundreds of ways to trick and manipulate you. And without a system of critical thinking, literacy is a form of slavery. So let me repeat that again. Literacy is a form of slavery until critical thinking is exercised by the reader. If you're not critically thinking, the signs can be lying to you and you're doing exactly what the liars want you to do. So in examining the New World Order concepts, I think that Paul's latest film, Believers Beware, builds out the history starting back with Plato and whatnot. And Paul, if you want to touch on that, I think there's a lot of good reference material that's to be found in book form that is actual and factual that's brought to bear through your film.
Well, thanks. Essentially, once you understand the root of philosophy and the difference between philosophy and ideology, then you see that there's this... the controllers are always trying to get us to follow an ideology because it's often very groundless and it's marked by all these isms that we have, which are control systems, people management systems. And this idea of a group of ruling elites controlling the many is like super old. You go back to Plato's allegory of the cave, and he's essentially explaining how you don't physically control the many, but you control their perceptions of reality and their understanding of what is correct and what is true. And they'll basically, once they come to trust you for information as an authority, you've got them. And the problem is that every system that uses that, eventually the population becomes more aware the more corrupt that control system becomes, and it gets overthrown. So the idea of a new world order is they want an order where the population is so subservient, so dumbed down, and they have such total control that they basically don't have to worry about a revolution happening. And so this ideology of the use of force and suppression to control this minimal subservient population is marked by this draw towards a psychopathic mentality, right? And it's represented by these corporate ships that are performing all these, you know, quote-unquote psychopathic actions against the people and the environment. So until we understand exactly what's going on, how this ideology has been perpetuated in different forms by different groups for thousands of years, so it's not the group affiliation but the ideology itself that is the common thread, so people won't start blaming, you know, the Jesuits or the Jews or just the Zionists or one particular group. They see how all these groups are interthreaded, not unlike the people in Murder on the Orient Express, the novel by Agatha Christie, where, sorry to ruin it, but everybody on the train was guilty of the murder. They all had a motive and intention. And so that's what people need to examine and understand. And once they come to that level of understanding where they see the big picture, which is like, you know, that's where our group is trying to relay this bigger picture in a more understandable way, because it's such a big idea, as George Bush Sr. said, a big idea, the New World Order. To get your mind around it and all its permutations, it's designed on purpose to be so huge as to make you crazy. Right, to drive all this conspiracy theory, because they've created this unreality that is our status quo that we're stuck in, and the only way to get to the regular reality is to go through this huge minefield of conspiracy theory. And so what we're trying to do is provide a compass with the tools of critical thinking and with, you know, easily digestible and shareable media that has high production value and is understandable in its delivery and reception. And that will get across the idea that gives people the understanding of what's going on, and then they can share that with other people and not have to worry about those people calling them crazy conspiracy theorists, because it's based in fact. It's something you can't argue against the tenets of critical thinking. Like, what's the downside of critical thinking? That's what I would say, right? Anyways, so that's the definition of a New World Order to me.
Well, and I also just thought, you know, I think it's important to point out that when you're looking at it as the ideology of people wanting to control other people, and they create ideas like the individual should be subservient to the state, you have to look at the pattern of history, the pattern of deception over history more specifically, and see that the only war that's ever been waged has been the war to suppress consciousness, and it's waged against the artists who are trying to express consciousness. And those who suppress consciousness have already reached a level of realization whereby, by suppressing everyone else, it allows them to maintain control without really having to grow themselves. It allows them to maintain a psychopathic state where they have access to unlimited resources, and therefore no one ever says no to them, because they're always, somebody around them always wants something they have. So anything they want, yes sir, we'll do that. You know, and so it gets very illogical very fast, because these people think that they are different than every other human being on this planet. And I hate to say it, but we all have the same nervous systems and digestive systems and et cetera. It's all about what we are doing with our hardware. What kind of software are we putting into our hardware in action here? Do we have a lot of viruses and fallacious ideas of the world and how it works? And if you do, those wrong decisions are always benefiting the New World Order, because they're set up to catch both sides. They're just set up to collect from your mistakes as much as some of your successes. That's how they've maintained control. So by defining it here in the beginning and looking at films like Believers Beware or Jason Burmes' Invisible Empire, which has like 20 minutes of clips of the politicians and the intellectual rulers, the non-elected rulers, saying this in their own words, in their own literature, and referring to it through history. So that's all right there as far as it existing. It's a matter of people needing to do their homework, which is in communication form. You have to add some grammar. You have to give them some knowledge, give them some references, give them some books, show them the history. You have to become a teacher in order to be able to communicate these ideas. And before you become a teacher, you have to understand what knowledge is and then be able to understand the knowledge itself.
And I would like to add, and this is Jan, I would like to add that the peace symbol itself is a symbol of the Hegelian dialectic, which is used against everybody. It's just like the Republican and Democratic parties. You have the left and the right, but what the New World Order's goal is the one in the middle. And this is represented by the peace symbol. They have a war. They automatically know that there's going to be a peace uprising, and their goal is the synergy between the two of those in the middle. And that is represented by the two sides of the peace symbol coming together into the one in the middle. And we should probably define a little bit about what this grammar, logic, and rhetoric stuff is that we're talking about. And as I mentioned earlier, it's the trivium. But grammar answers the question of who, what, where, and when of a subject. And logic answers the why of a subject without contradiction. And then rhetoric provides the how of a subject.
So you want to know how to defeat the New World Order. Well, you first have to know who, what, when, and where, and why. So why are they controlling us? How, and what are those methods of control? And then you're left with the how. The how is the action that you can take based on your knowledge and understanding. So to go back to the Hegelian dialectic for a second, the Hegelian dialectic is the use of the trivium, but it's censoring certain pieces of grammar. So they say there's this thing going on, which they've created, because if you knew all the grammar, there'd be no problem. If you knew all the knowledge that was available, but they censor part of it. So because they censor part of it, now there's a problem. People then have a reaction. They then get a desired solution. That is a system. And when used in that fashion of grammar, logic, and rhetoric, it turns into a wheel. And with that wheel, they make a lot of progress. And until we get our own wheel, which adds back that grammar, which changes the understanding and shows that, oh, well, Al Gore has all these other investments, and Al Gore faked his data, and Al Gore did this and this and this in this presentation, Inconvenient Truth. So that changes the logic of it. He's no longer the good guy hero. He's now a crook. And the rhetoric is, don't give the prick the satisfaction of buying into his lie. Because in order for someone to lie to you, you have to give them permission. You first have to believe their lie for them to effectively lie to you. So I say stop believing things until you run it through your system, which produces only facts. And then you're left with good judgment, because that's the key to everything. That's how they control us.
And I just wanted to add real quickly here that the trivium forms a habitual pattern of how to think effectively, not what to think. And I want to mention that the trivium is the system that they use against us. It's their operating system. It's basically those who have the trivium can do circles around those that don't, because literally you can, well, this is where sophism comes from, and the sophisticated people, those are the elitists, those are the ones who use false rhetoric. And a sophist is literally somebody who uses false rhetoric not to find the truth, but just to win an argument or to win somebody's opinion. And so the sophists, the sophisticated, those are the elites who are using these false arguments to maintain their power and control. And even, for example, the Trilateral Commission's logo is the logo, the ancient logo of the trivium. And the trivium was originally in its present form, it was solidified by Aristotle. And the quadrivium was solidified by Pythagoras. And there's various forms of the so-called classical education today. Some people think that the trivium is Christian. It's actually a very pre-Christian thing, and it could possibly go all the way back to India. But we have to know their operating system and how they work if we're going to beat the New World Order. We have to beat them at their own game by knowing the tools that they're using, and therefore understanding the game and being able to portray that information to others effectively.
So the whole history of everything that we're talking about is found in the Peace Revolution podcast. And I think that's important. If any of this interests you, then you should go check that out, because it's in Jan's work. It's in our work as a group. It's all over the place now if you check out our sites. But the point would be, at a certain point in the 19th century, this was taken out of our education system. So we were denied the opportunity to learn how to learn, which made us ever dependent on teachers. And we have to go to a teacher, tell us how to do this, tell us how to do this. It's like going to learn guitar, but you only learn two guitar songs every session, and you can't learn anything on your own, as opposed to being taught, here's how to make the chords, here's how to hit the different notes, and then you can play any type of music you want. They box us in with what's called outcome-based education. John Taylor Gatto's work touches on this. Charlotte Iserby's work touches on this. Anthony Sutton's work touches on this. But the point would be that without this systematic form of critical thinking, in the 20th century, we were all put left like naked against like fallacious rhetoric and persuasive propaganda, public relations, public opinion, all these things that Tavistock and Bernays and Lippmann brought to the table, which became corporate advertising. And if you look at the rates of cancer and heart attacks and heart disease and everything like this, people are looking at food sources. But I would argue It's when radio and TV came around to change people's attitudes and to tell them what they should start eating. And without critical thinking, they were left at the beck and call of these crazy psychopathic billionaire corporations that were selling them poison in the form of food, selling them poison in the form of their politics and economic policies. I mean, it's really how they got it over on us in the 20th century was our exposure to all these things without a virus scan of critical thinking. And it's just like putting your computer on the net without a virus scan or a spam filter. You're going to get filled up with a lot of junk that you don't need. And that's the metaphor that I would draw here, is that your computer is made up of rust on a disk and some sand and a bunch of electricity that's put in there to make that stuff. But at the end of the day, we spend thousands of dollars on our computers and a whole bunch of money trying to protect these things. But our mind, we leave open all the time with no protection, and we put absolutely no money into our own educations, right? And yet the use of a computer depends completely on what's in our mind and what we can do with our minds. So I don't see how we can continually expect to be happy when we're not being nice to other people, not giving them the benefit of the doubt, not learning for ourselves, which is a big source of happiness. If you're not learning for yourself, I'm guaranteeing you're not really happy. You are superficially comfortable by your external situation, but you have no idea what's going on here, because it takes a lot of work to look at these things and think about it. But that's what our life is about. This place seems to be a classroom, and figuring out the problem of the New World Order seems to be the test that we're all being given right now.
It certainly does, doesn't it? And I guess that brings us back to a point that I hope the Corbett Report makes in just about every podcast that I issue, is the fundamental point that the New World Order is ultimately an attempt to control people's minds and suppress their consciousness, and the various methods through which that's done. And as you've pointed out, it used to be done in very physical and overt ways, and is now done more by mental manipulation. And I guess that brings us to the point of the trivium. And of course, you've already introduced it, but perhaps we should turn the trivium against itself and start to introduce it through the who, what, where, and when, so that people have a firm grasp of exactly what we're dealing with here.
All right. Well, Paul, did you want to jump in on that for a second?
Well, you guys summarized it pretty well. I would stress that the trivium still exists. It's taught in a handful of classrooms in like elite universities today, and that if people understand, you know, it's all around 1900 to 1913. A whole bunch of weird stuff happened all over the world, and it's that part of history is pretty glossed over. At least in my Canadian history books, and I'm sure in the American history books, they just jump straight to World War II because they specifically don't want you to examine that period of time. That's when the modern system was really locked down. And, you know, by 1933, they're like, hey, we pretty much got it down. Our enterprise is complete. Let's put it on the money that we're going to make these people worship. So the trivium lets you see and understand all that stuff in context, and allows you to take in new information without emotionally reacting to it, because a lot of this information is paradigm shifting, and we're conditioned to be in this more infantile state, you know, without being responsible adults. We're kept artificially infantile so that when we do come across paradigm shifting information, we react emotionally, slide past critical thinking, and go into a traumatized shell. And, you know, critical thinking, the trivium method, is the best form of intellectual self-defense, so that when somebody comes at you with paradigm-shifting information or fallacious rhetoric, you have a black belt in defending yourself against those kind of attacks. And then it doesn't affect you emotionally anymore, and you can make rational, logical decisions, you can take constructive action, and you can share that information with other people in a way that's not full-on and overwhelming them, but is in a way that draws in their curiosity. So there's my point.
Well, and let's look at the metaphor you drew right there about them putting the pyramid on the back of the dollar. There's this eye above the pyramid that's separated from the rest of the pyramid. That separation represents the wealth gap. The wealth gap is created by suppression of consciousness and suppression of information and realization, and that's what creates that gap. The pyramid from the side, if there were four people standing around the base of the pyramid, each would see a different side with different shadowing depending on the sun, etc. So you'd have four different perspectives, and that would cause arguments and conflicts. However, when you progress to the top of the pyramid and look down, you can see all four sides simultaneously in balance. That represents the quadrivium. The side of the pyramid, the three-angled side, represents the trivium. Pyramid means fire in the middle. And that's how they control us, the fire in the minds of men. Your beliefs, your convictions, they get you to go and do these things that are illogical, irrational, put human beings' survival in conflict with the status quo. They create a world that is in every way not what we need to survive, but rather what gives them more power and what more profit, etc. What you need to do is figure out that we all need clean air, fresh water, fresh food, security, all these other things that are in common. Put aside our trivial differences, recognize the tremendous similarities, and start to recognize that when the status quo is in direct conflict with our needs as human beings to survive, that culture is not your friend. Culture is the operating system they conditioned us to go and give them our power. But as soon as you uncondition yourself from that status quo, you have cut yourself off from their matrix. You're a dead battery to them. They can't even recognize you anymore because you don't have what they need anymore. You're no longer the prey. And the more of us we can get not being prey by practicing intellectual self-defense, the faster, the better. Because their system has been working for them for thousands of years, and we're not going to expect it to just break down. We're going to know that their system works, why it works, and how to make their system obsolete by outlearning them while they're busy out there being greedy.
I should add, or I should go into actually, some of the logical fallacies, because I think giving people a few examples of the logical fallacies specifically enables them to see how this stuff all works right away. We can give them a practical application of these things.
Well, you're an idiot. Why am I going to listen to you, dude? You don't know anything.
That's an
ad hominem attack.
Exactly. And that's one of the most common ones used. Somebody is gay or they're liberal or Republican or whatever, so therefore their opinion can't be valid. I've heard people say, oh, well, somebody told me recently because John Taylor Gatto had one of his books published on his website that he wasn't a real author, even though he's been published as an author for 20 years and he's one of the most respected researchers on the education system. Another common argument is a red herring, and that's when you throw out a different argument that's designed to appear like the first argument, but it completely detracts the person away from the real story or the real track of what they were discussing.
Hold on a second. Let's just give it some context, because fallacy had no meaning to me until I learned it comes from the Latin word fallere, meaning to deceive. So these are cunning. There's like, let's say there's 200 fallacies. There's 40 common ones, you know, to be general about it, because there's no exact lists. This is also very interesting, right? These have existed for thousands of years, yet there's no exact lists on all the various ways that are already predetermined and recognized how people lie to each other. So the question is, if you catch someone using fallacies trying to convince you of something, the question is, why do they need to use deception to show you something that's true?
Because you are either with us or you are with the terrorists.
Well, because they think you're either foolish enough to take their BS, or, you know, they haven't even really thought out what they're saying, and they're an honest person who's passing on unknowledge or deception or fiction, because that's the problem with honest people. They don't know when they're being lied to, which is the whole thing that the trivium and recognizing what it is and how they've used it against us, therefore we know how to use it for ourselves now, brings to the table, because it allows you not only to detect a lie, but how to show that the liar is intellectually bankrupt. And that is intellectual self-defense, which is what you need in 99% of your life interactions. You don't need physical self-defense. You need to defend yourself from people using words to take away your free will and to take away your ability to make informed choices, because that is what life's about. And if you recognize it's been ongoing, then you can do something about it, but not until you're aware that A, it's going on, and B, that there's a system to address all of this that is working.
And it should be pointed out that the fallacies are broken down into three specific groups, which are 1, relevance, 2, presumption, and 3, ambiguity. And all of the different fallacies from there fall under those three groups. And I'm sure many listeners have heard of the straw man argument. That's a common one. That's basically setting up an almost identical argument. But it has.
That's what they did to loose change. That's what
right. It's exactly what they. Right, at Popular Mechanics. They brought up a straw man argument, pretended to debunk that, make Jason Burmes look like a tin hat wearing fool, and then Jason Burmes just turns to him and says, you're a liar. And, you know, he was right. That's exactly what they were doing. But, you know,
without the ability to call him out and articulate how he's lying, because there's two things. There's the critical thinking that you have to practice. Then there's the level of critical thinking that the audience can realize. So for Jason to say, you're a liar, only intellectual people who understand why the guy's a liar understand it. Jason also needs to communicate to the audience, you're a liar because you're using these fallacies, call them out on those specific fallacies, and then it shows the intellectual bankruptcy, especially if James Miggs is appealing to laughter. Right there, as soon as he has to try to appeal to laughter, you're intellectually bankrupt, and Jason could have called him out on it.
And speaking of appeal to fallacies, there's a lot of these appeal fallacies, and they're very common. Appeal to belief, appeal to authority, like, oh, well, this person is on the news, and he's wearing a funny costume, and he sits behind a news desk, so therefore we should believe him. Or this guy who wears a lapel that we call the president, or a person who puts a crown on her head and wears a bunch of fancy, funny clown costumes call
costumes
royalty.
Costumes that people wear to take away your own volition.
Or the Royal Society, which is, of course, the most esteemed scientific society in the world, which could not possibly have gotten anything wrong on climate science, except for the fact that they just issued a retraction of their previous position and now admit that climate skepticism is okay. So now that they admit it, I guess it is okay.
Ah, well, that's good to know. And there's also various others of these, but appeal to complexity, appeal to force, which is also another, also called ad baculum. It basically means that if you don't do this, I'm going to take a bat to you, and I'm going to beat the crud out of you if you don't believe what I say. And there's many, many different ones, but there's basically 22 to 40 primary ones. But as I already mentioned, the three main categories of them all basically explain them. But I recommend your listeners and viewers go out on the internet and look up logical fallacies so that they can begin to understand that. And we've also got a list of them up at triviumeducation.com.
I suppose it might be important to understand also that just because someone deploys a logical fallacy does not mean they are in fact mistaken or that they are in fact wrong.
Not necessarily, but what it means is that you should be careful of what they're saying and analyze it and know that that's the fallacist fallacy is somebody who believes that just because somebody made everything stated in fallacies that it's incorrect. But it should give you pause to double check that person and make sure and not just dismiss everything they say just because it's a fallacy. But politicians, marketing companies, like if you watch a 30-second commercial, usually they'll run the gambit of logical fallacies. And so if you are aware of these things, you can say, oh, well, they just used an appeal to emotion on me. If I drink this beer, this hot brunette with blue eyes is going to come to me, and I'm going to have a wonderful life forever and ever. These are all fallacies.
And if you're aware of those cunning attempts to trick you, then you become impervious. You become insulated. They stop drawing your power. You're no longer going to be affected the way that they want you to. And they spend billions and billions of dollars between advertising companies, marketing companies, public relations companies, perception management companies, to figure out how to manipulate us. And if it wasn't successful, they wouldn't keep putting their money into it every year. So the best thing you can do is recognize it goes on. You know, awareness is a good thing, but the next thing you need to do is systematically take these things out of your conscious thinking, get them off your desk. You don't want to deal with them because they don't bring you any value to your long-term goals. That's what people have to recognize. And what I'm doing right now, a short-term, time-sucking, soul-sucking type of TV interaction, comedy sitcom thing, or is what I'm doing, I'm reading something that I'm going to learn and use every day for the rest of my life? Which one of those two people do you think has a good chance of survival in this situation where the idea of eugenics and mass sterilization and genocide and all this stuff has been logically presented to people using all this fallacious rhetoric, and people have bought into it, and it's not the truth. There's just plenty of food for everybody, but greed will always be here, even if you take away 80% of the population. Look up
just
there's a video called Food, There's Plenty of It, or There's Lots of It. And it shows all this data that says, even if you took away the population, the greed would still be here, and they would still be starving people to control them, which is ruthless. We cannot let that go on into future generations, knowing what we know now.
And as far as using false rhetoric to present eugenics and things like that, people only need to go and watch the Bill Gates TED Talk from February of this year, where he is using all of these various types of logical fallacies on the audience as he's presenting this information. But by you knowing the logical fallacies, by you understanding how to break things down into the subject and predicate of a sentence and figure out if it's true or false, and be able to, if a statement is false, then you need to go down and figure out what logical fallacy it was that was just used against you. But the trivium method is a systematic method for deriving certainty for the information coming into you via your five senses. And once you're able to systematically break down this information, you effectively neutralize the New World Order. And that's the most important thing, because this is their tool. This gets down at the roots of the entire problem. We can sit here and we can talk about 911 or medical marijuana or industrial hemp or the medical system or you know, OPEC and the oil problems. But until people get down to the operating system and understand how the whole thing works, all they're doing is they're whacking at the branches. If people get down to the roots and understand the grammar, the logic, and the rhetoric, the trivium, they will effectively neutralize the New World Order, and all of their tactics become completely powerless.
So let's talk about, you know, the aspect of fear and confusion and uncertainty that drives a lot of people every day. The New World Order created an environment where fear and uncertainty and, you know, unknowns are all over the place. We wake up into this world every day. And yet our education system never gave us a process to make knowns out of unknowns. They never taught us how to learn for ourselves, right? And so because of that, everyone's kind of waking up into this chaotic state where they don't know what's going to happen. They don't have any way to predict the future. And therefore, we all need a systematic way of discerning, hey, taking this fear and seeing that it's an opportunity to learn something, and take it beyond that so you can overcome that fear, because they surround us with fears before they surround us with guns. If there's a layer of words, and if you go through those words, that's when they point the guns at you. But the idea that you have to understand what is making them fearful enough of us in the first place. Why don't they just take select kids out of the learning system that are a threat? They basically sterilize all of our curiosity, right? They amputate our curiosity by giving us pseudo knowledge. And that is because any one of us could break out at any time and figure out their ruse. The reason that the New World Order can be and will be defeated is that they've taken up a position based on deception. It's not indicative of the truth. They've already given up that which we all find to be the most valuable. So it's not something we have to steal back from them. It's out there. It's just a matter of you taking your habitual time and starting to consume some of the information and media that we've put out, because we've basically been trying to paint an accurate map of the territory. And the map is not the terrain, but the terrain is what you actually go through when you go through the map, right?
And stop paying the cable companies every month on your cable bill to lie to you month in and month out. Cut that money flow off to them and refunnel it to podcasts and projects like this.
Yeah, because the answers are never going to be advertised to you on TV. It's not profitable for them to do these sort of things and put it out there. However, it is profitable for you to start taking back your time and analyzing, is this a long-term thing that I'm going to, you know, benefit from this activity? Am I learning something that's going to help me survive? And in the case of practicing critical thinking and analyzing what you think you already know so that you can get to an accurate data set and from there be able to make accurate make accurate judgments every day, that allows you to achieve happiness. Because without making consistent, accurate judgments, you're always going to be dealing with the recoil and regret from these other situations where you weren't thinking critically. That's a process of not doing it systematically. And basically, the summary would be those who use implicit forms of critical thinking, which is trial and error, are always subservient to those who use explicit forms of critical thinking, which deliver consistency as a result of a defined process. So to use a metaphor, it's like interchangeable parts. If you're critical thinking in an implicit or ad hoc manner, which is what 99% of the population does, you're creating a unique part every time something, you know, breaks, in, i.e. every time you need critical thinking, you're doing it in a unique way. And this only works for one person's perspective because you can't transfer it to other people. They'll be like, well, that's your belief. That's not really based on knowledge. The explicit form, i.e. the systematic form of the trivium, delivers consistent components which are usable by any other system thinker. So it's like open source thinking, which allows them to act as a group and keep us, you know, it's like cowboys and cows. The reason that they can do this is because they have communication and they're signaling to each other and they're doing things that we can't yet see or understand. But once you can see and understand those signals, you can insulate yourself from them, which gives you your freedom back. And then you can educate yourself because that allows you to pursue and attain your happiness.
Indeed. Well, so if the battle that's going on is a battle for consciousness, then obviously the battlefield is the mind, which I guess indicates that all of the armor and the armory that we need to wage this battle is in fact already within our own minds, and it only has to be unlocked and or trained from here.
Exactly right. In fact, the trivium method is the natural system in which your mind works when it hasn't been run through 12 years of conditioning in the government-run school systems, that even the bells that are in between classes are actually taken from Pavlov's dogs, and that's designed to break your concentration and get you ready for the workforce of the military when you have a certain time when you get to go potty or get to eat or get a coffee break or whatever. And so the entire system is set up to take that away from us in a way, or to force us to forget how our own minds work. And because they apply this stuff to us when we're children and into our early adulthoods, by the time we're adults, most of us have been completely brainwashed and we buy completely into their false rhetoric. Whereas if you spend a day studying the logical fallacies, you'll never see corporate media the same again. Every time you hear a commercial, and the nice thing about it is then you can use commercials to begin to identify the logical fallacies and the false rhetoric that they're using against you.
Just learn one new fallacy a day. I mean, over 40 days, you'd be impervious to most of those lies, and those commercials and the politicians on the news channels will become laughable. I mean, that's something we should just recommend to everybody. There's a list on Yon's site. Get the list. Learn one new fallacy a day. And all day you'll be picking up on people using that specific fallacy. There's a way to defeat the New World Order right there. One habit change.
And we should also mention a Cornell University study that was done. Rich, why don't you tell them about the Cornell study?
The title slips my mind, but I'll send it to James. So it'll be on the notes page of CorbettReport.com. And the article basically gives a couple examples, but the summary of the article would be this, that the problem with incompetent people is that they fail to recognize their own incompetence and that it's very hard to communicate to them their incompetence. And I think that I know I definitely took me a long time to recognize my own incompetence. And once you recognize that you don't really know anything until you have a system, and that you're not competent until you're having a system to make these good judgments. So I was like, okay, I was incompetent. I took a step forward. I said, let's leave that zone. I don't want to be incompetent forever. And let's learn how to be a critical thinker. So Cornell had done the study in 1999, I believe. And Jan, you had reached out to the author of that study. But the point is that the whole study shows that the problem is we've been conditioned with pseudo-knowledge such that thinking we know cuts off our curiosity to learn anything because we already know about that. So we have this, I refer to my own mind as the bear trap mind, where it's always, even though I know this goes on, I continually have to pry the bear trap open to let some information in. It's not a very good metaphor because information and bear traps don't really connect. But the picture, the picture in your mind of trying to strain open the bear trap all the time, that's what I feel like, you know, even Jan, when you sent me the Oiling of America, I've learned this lesson like 10 times already, but I still, I guess, haven't learned it because I continually, I was like, oh, you know, I don't listen. But watching that movie right away was something I did not do. And in hindsight, it was like, damn, my mind was closed. I thought because of the title, I already knew what it was.
And he's referring to Sally Phelan's new DVD, The Oiling of America.
Right, which is a presentation that basically says that there's no connection between cholesterol and heart disease and heart attacks, and the whole medical American Heart Association industry type thing has been lying to our families and committing genocide against us through our food, knowingly for profit for
eugenics, America.
Yeah, the past 100 years. So in learning about these things like eugenics, again, I thought I knew about eugenics because I knew how it applied to Hitler and the Nazis and the Jews, right? And then I learned how Americans and British had actually given those ideas. And then I learned about the concentration camps coming from Cecil Rhodes in South Africa and how all these ideas. So the idea of eugenics, not only against people of color, but against any undesirable group of people, it's not a new thing. And it's not something that doesn't just pertain. It pertains to everybody because it's being done against everybody we know. And so to learn about that from, someone like Sally Phelan, who's presenting, you know, this health information, to understand that the doctors and the pharmaceutical companies and all this, and she gives all this proof. And, you know, it wasn't something I expected to see in that. And then I saw this other film this past week called MAFA 21, which is a perspective on the history of genocide specifically against African Americans. And I thought I knew a lot about this subject, and I was shocked and horrified, continuously to see how systematic it is in the minds of these psychopaths. And I guess we shouldn't be surprised given that they are not like us in mindset. They do not find human life valuable. They just find their life valuable.
Let me jump in there. See, what the elites believe is that everybody else is feeble-minded, but what they've done is they've created a system of education to create those feeble-minded sheeple or the cattle out there of the mass of the population. And because those people don't have the trivium and critical thinking, they go around believing that they're genetically superior than us when they're the ones who created the bogus education systems to intentionally dumb us down. And then they sit there and they tread on us because they don't give us these systems in the first place.
Well, they break our legs and then they're like, oh, well, these people are all handicapped. None of them can walk.
Exactly. And you know what? There is a quote on that I want to read very quickly here. It says, "For if you, the rulers, suffer your people to be ill-educated and their manners be corrupted from their infancy, and then punish them for those crimes to which their first education disposed them, what else is to be concluded from this but that you first make thieves and outlaws and then punish them?" And that's from Sir Thomas More from roughly 1535.
Right. And the idea is that they create the status quo. The summary is the status quo is created to benefit from our ill decisions. The decisions which generate regret for us generate power for the new world order. And that's the same thing. They create a society of laws so that they can make criminals, so they can imprison all these people and make prisons for profit. It's all anything that aggrandizes their current structure of power and control will be adopted. And anything that goes up against it, like what we do, will be shunned, and the fewest of few will hear about it because the structure of everyone else that's trying to act like their alternative media is to tell you one thing, which is fear, 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 now buy gold. Fear, 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 now buy gold. Gold is predicated on uncertainty. The trivium provides a process, a system for certainty. It would bring the price of gold to the bottom because if everyone had less uncertainty, nobody would have the uncertainty that drives gold up. That's why you're not going to hear about this other places, because what we're positioning here in front of you is, hey, here's how they fuck you at the drive-thru, and here's how to get what you really want. This is what you came here for. You came here to work with the facts and actual information, which is what all of our podcasts try to bring together and put into a sequential order so it's easy not only for you to understand, but for you to give it to somebody else and have a conversation so that you can learn to teach people likewise. Here, it's not about telling you what to think. Our message is learn how to think for yourself, because learning this one thing, this lost tool of learning, learning how to learn for yourself, any subject or topic, is going to make all of your research and everything else in your life that you do a lot easier. And I'm not saying that because I'm, pitching it. I'm saying it because I've found it to be invaluable. I've made more progress intellectually in the past 6 months and gotten more from all these books and found out, hey, well, this person right here is using this rhetoric, this contradictory statement, this, and this to deceive me. Oh, well, I no longer find them to be credible until I find something that explains a logical reason why they're doing that, because it's either they don't know or they're doing it on purpose. And in either case, I don't need them as an expert in my mind. So to be able to clear your mind of all these
mental antivirus.
Right. It's a mental antivirus. That's what intellectual self-defense is. It's having a doorman on the proverbial, you know, club that is your mind. You don't want to let these other
a doorman for the five senses of information coming into your mind.
Right. And that's what the process of the trivium does. It has you question everything that's coming in through the five senses, because we are tricked. How do magicians or theatrical presentations trick us? Limited perspectives. Things going off, things going on off screen, backstage, side stage, over the stage that you can't see. But if you get up on that stage and you study how the actors are taught and how the producers work and the directors and the lighting guys and all this other stuff, it's no longer a mystery. It's no longer fearful. It's no longer a threat. And it's definitely something you can learn how to deal with. Maybe you deal with it by creating a piece of media that's presented on their media stage and informs the audience that, hey, these people are lying to you and here's how to spot the lies.
Paul Verge, you have been awfully quiet. What do you have to add?
I'm just entranced by all the beautiful rhetoric that's going back and forth. I was going to say that the...
Not false rhetoric.
No, there's not. I mean, you know, other than the occasional ad hominem, which is very well placed, you know, there's a ton of truth in what you guys are saying. And I wanted to just comment on the point of that a lot of people don't know that they're using fallacies. And so, yes, we can't discount some truth being somewhere because someone's using a fallacy. But when someone uses a fallacy, it should influence your line of questioning, right? Critical thinking is just as much about questioning as it is about thinking, because you're constantly going back and forth with someone trying to exchange information. And if you can't understand each other, it's a waste of time. That's why people become violent, because they no longer have the words to articulate how they feel. So they just want to give you the energy transfer with a fist or a bullet or whatever. Whereas if we took the time to actually listen and put the effort in to understand, then we would save a lot of time and energy and bloodshed. So the other comment I wanted to make was about the whole aspect of the difference between information and knowledge. It's important to understand that in our massive technological society today, we have this just tsunami of information on every little minor detail of every celebrity's shoe type and, you know, criminal record. And it's all designed to get us to give up privacy and be entertained by the notion of giving up our privacy. So it's serving a dual purpose, where you've got Facebook, which is this great way to stay socially connected to your friends and you know, people that you haven't talked to in 20 years. But at the same time, you're giving up all this private information willingly, and you don't really know where that information is going to be going, what database or what marketing company is going to be using that information to create a dossier that tailors things to your habits. And James, your podcast 145, You Are Being Gamed, really put things in perspective for me, where you have this future society where everything's being tracked, and the incentive for being tracked is so that you can be given points, something even more worthless than paper dollars. And that is the ultimate, like, you know, prison for your mind, because if you think of it as layers of prisons that the New World Order likes to try and instill on us, they've mastered physical prison. They've got that whole concept down. They've got many layers of mental prisons down, from propaganda to TV advertising. But getting us to actually be apathetic, to stamp out our curiosity and actually not care about any of the stuff that's going on, but to actually care about something like, did I walk an extra quarter mile to have 200 bonus points? That to me is like about removing us from our humanity, from removing us from caring about things that matter, and redirecting our compassionate energy or our giving energy towards something that's completely worthless. So, yeah, reshifting our habits away from this whole idea of distraction or entertainment, which really means diversion, diverting our attentions back to what's important, like our families and our health and our habits, I think is one of the most key ways to defeat the New World Order. It starts with ourselves, right?
Diverge from the status quo.
Exactly.
How divergent. You know,
exactly. We should cover objection handling and what to do if, say, you say the New World Order exists and someone's response is, you're a conspiracy theorist. We need to, first off, spot those types of logical fallacies and then, you know, be able to overcome them. Hey, you know, instead of making ad hominem attacks against each other, let's get down and let's look at the research together so that we can get on the same page, literally, and
find out if they want to have a meaningful conversation.
Exactly. And if they're interested in truth and actually discovering, then they won't sit there and continue to make one logical fallacy after the other. Some people I've come across, even if you point out the logical fallacies, they don't care. They don't care to find the truth. They've been told what to think by the corporate media, and that's it. Another thing that we covered earlier, at the very beginning, the word liberal, that's one of the most common things to throw out there to get people to stop critical thinking. Oh, you're a liberal. And what they've done is they've literally changed the word liberal itself to keep people's attention diverted away from critical thinking and from being able to properly analyze information. If you're afraid to even look up in a dictionary and properly define what a liberal is and therefore discover a liberal education, the seven liberal arts, the trivium and the quadrivium, then they've got you over a barrel. And not only that, but the word trivium itself has been trivialized into trivia, into meaninglessness by them, by the sophists and their false rhetoric, to keep people from discovering how to see through their sophisticated web of lies. And so these are tools that people have, you know, and the main thing is people have to stop being lazy. They have to be willing to, first off, go to tragedyandhope.com, go to triviumeducation.com, check out, you know, your work, James, check out Paul's work and Brett Vinat's podcast and James Evan Pilato, and do their homework. We have to stop being lazy. We have to stop allowing the corporate media or any media outlet to do our thinking for us. We have to take that over ourselves, and the trivium is how to accomplish that.
You got to stop people from lying to you, and that starts with stop believing, you know, without having a system to find out if what you're going to believe is based on fact.
And I also want to mention real quick that Paul, Rich, and I have been working for the last couple of months with a screenwriter by the name of George Clayton Johnson, who's rather famous in the film industry for doing projects. He wrote Star Trek Episode One, the very first original episode. He wrote 8 of the original Twilight Zone episodes. He wrote Logan's Run, Ocean's 11, and a few other things. And we've actually been working with him for the last 2 months on writing a Hollywood screenwrite on the trivium and the quadrivium so that we can effectively get this information out there to many more people.
So the idea is that if we can express in film form that gets out to a couple million people how to learn for themselves, the process of how to learn, then they would not only be enabled to go outside of the movie and be able to rapidly and efficiently and effectively learn for themselves, but we would also arm them with a process of critical thinking, identification of the fallacies, and it's all told through the struggle and story of dialogue and characters that's based in a near future. And the idea is that this future society reflects a lot of the ills that we could be dealing with now but haven't been dealt with, and the solution there is the same solution now. It's going to be the same solution until people get it. And it's that the, you know, the soul of mankind is in these books. This is where our freedom and our liberty come from. And the fact that our libraries are being closed down and books are being thrown away, and that the books that they've made in the last 100 years are all based on wood pulp paper that's already eating itself away and evaporating, right, and turning to dust. We have to blend our use of technology with getting these actual artifacts. Get what you can afford, buy the used books when you can afford them, and find out which books are the best ones to get first, because some of these would greatly enable your ability to discern, dissect, understand and really comprehend these things in a comprehensive nature, not from a focused PhD perspective where it's like you have to defend the status quo. You want to fill in all those blanks because everyone's focused perspective through the outcome-based education system leaves a whole bunch of information on the table, and that's where the solutions are. Einstein said if you want to solve the problems, you got to first, you know, do something about the mindset that created those problems. And that is the psychedelic state, the mind-expanding state of reading. That's what reading brings to the table that TV and films really don't do. But in today's age, we have to produce videos and films and podcasts and all sorts of, you know, different types of media because everyone's got their different proclivities and their different idiosyncrasies about what they think they are and who they think they are and how they like to take in data. And we have to build a ramp so people can find at any level an easy progressive way to get their freedom back, to get their lives back, because other people have figured out how you work better than you understand yourself. And until you raise your level of comprehension to that, you know, which you can understand how they're controlling you through these equations, and above that, so that you can be outside of that, you are not your own person, and you would be a lot happier. Trust me, if you had a better clue what's going on, because it's less confusion, it's less fear, it's more confidence, and the confidence is not provisional self-esteem that someone else can take away. It's based on your own work and experience and knowledge and understanding. And I think that's where we all have to head if we want to defeat the New World Order.
Well, it sounds like we're coming towards a logical conclusion for this conversation, but I guess in wrapping up, is there anything that any of you would like to say to summarize today's points?
Well, you could summarize, you know, by saying the trivium, grammar is knowledge, and knowledge is a process of organizing data in formation. The logics aspect of the trivium is the understanding of our knowledge, and the wisdom is sharing what we understand with others, which is what we're doing right here. And so what we do at Tragedy
and Hope, rhetoric.
Yeah, the Tragedy and Hope aspect of the site is the rhetoric. It's the output of the knowledge. It's the wisdom that we've learned. And it's a confluence of critical thinking where knowledge and understanding become wisdom. So there's that.
And I believe that my point has always been, and I assume that you would share this viewpoint, my point has always been to motivate the listeners to themselves become producers of knowledge rather than passive recipients and to reach that rhetoric stage of the trivium.
Well, absolutely, James, because I think that's how we all got here. We all started as listeners and people who were interested. And because of our actions and reprioritizing our TV time and things like this, we created time to learn new pieces of software. I wasn't trained in how to produce media or how to make films or cinematography or lighting or how to do post-production, all these other things that we've all had to learn. Compositing, like these things are all things that we've learned in order to be able to express ourselves to a larger audience, because nobody's going to come and say, hey, you know, here's $3 million, do whatever you guys want. We, in fact, were offered $3 million 2 years ago to not do what we're doing right now, okay? And we turned it down because that money came with the caveat of you can't say anything that you guys want to say. You can't tell people that they're controlled, that they have owners, that they're dumbed down, that they need critical thinking, you know. And so we said no, obviously, because we're all still broke and struggling, and it took us 2 years to get to a point that we could have made in one day if we had that money with no strings attached. But the point is, you don't want to take the money to do any of this. You want to do it as art, because when we did it as art, like we've done so far, it remains real and it remains in integrity with what the audience needs. This is actually what people need as opposed to what we think we want to give them, right? We found out through our own process of struggle and trial and error how to get to this point, which is something realistic that people can follow in those footprints. And with your show providing the notes and with what you've been missing, like, we're going to provide the scripts to the audience so you can see exactly what I had to write down to be able to produce a show of this quality. And that way people can copy it and make their own shows and learn how to be just not so much media producers as much as artists in their life. You're living your life as a form of art, like we're all doing, James, right? You're taking what you're learning, you're integrating it, you're refining it, and you're sharing it with a larger audience, getting that feedback and doing that process again. Right. And that's the trivium process. It's the natural process that critical thinkers naturally, you know, this is how you learn things. You learn the individual pieces, how they work together. That's the understanding. And then how to use this new microphone or this new computer or this new camera or whatever we have in front of us. We have a system of learning. And now that we're able to name these different steps and communicate it to other people, people can, you know, you can learn anything you want to learn. The barriers, the walls have been torn down. This is what tears down the wall in Pink Floyd terms.
And Jan?
Goodness, let's see. Well, we need to always remember that the information coming in through our five senses always needs to be processed and analyzed for accuracy before we literally jump to conclusions. If you are out in the jungle and you hear a rustle in the bushes, it could be either the wind or maybe there's a panther or some predator there waiting for you. And it,
so you need to collect more information. You need to pay attention and take in information. And that's the grammar step. That's the first step. It's not just run away. It's not just panic. Panic gets us nowhere. The first time we're in fear, the first thing you want to do is collect information. If you're scared of something, start inquiring. Figure that out. You're scared because you don't understand it. We're not afraid of brushing our teeth because we're familiar with that process. We've done it hundreds of, hopefully thousands of times, right? The idea is that it's the unfamiliarity and it's the unfamiliarity and the not having a process to deal with uncertainty and unknowns and confusion and fear that puts us all under their control. The Trivium gives you that process to put it through. Now you have data. Now you have understanding. Now you have experience and confidence. Now you can take action as if you had no fear. And there's no need to go out and create love in the world. Love is all that exists when you remove the fear from this place. And fear is the biggest problem out there, and it is the main cord through which they pull everybody's strings. So we're giving you a gift that allows you through your own volition, through your own, you know, process, on your own time, to remove these things from your operating system because they are doing you no good. It's exactly how they control you.
I just wanted to thank James and Jan and Rich for all putting out their podcasts, just because they've been an enormous learning journey for me. Jan's podcast with Gino Denning, if people want to learn more in depth about the Trivium and the Quadrivium, I believe episodes 49, 50, and 51.
Yes, and that's up on the triviumeducation.com site also.
Yeah, and Maria Heller has also got tons and tons and tons of interviews that have been, she's collected over the last 10 years, which, you know, that's just a huge learning resource. So there's a ton of information that people can take, and it's in an audio format. You know, if you don't have time to read, because we want to make reading cool, right? We got to make it cool again so that people start reading again. But if you don't have the active participation of a video, say you're exercising or you're driving or whatever, and you want to listen to an MP3, instead of listening to music, which we all love music, but instead of listening to music, you want to learn something, put on a podcast, put on a Corbett Report or a Gnostic Media podcast or one of Maria Heller's interviews.
And I should add to that that people can also get the program Text Aloud for their computer that will read text and PDFs into an MP3 file or just read them out loud. And they can also go to Amazon.com and buy an Amazon Kindle. And that will also read books to you. And while you're driving in your car, you can plug the Kindle headphone jack into your car stereo auxiliary input, and you can listen to books while you're driving.
So, you know, there's ways to efficiently learn. You don't have to completely change your life and become a crazy techno shaman hippie. You just got to make one small change at a time. It's not too overwhelming. And, you know, tiptoe totalitarianism works for a reason, right? We humans are adaptable and malleable, and we adjust to change in small amounts pretty well. So just use that fact to your advantage and start making those changes, and you'll notice a positive outcome, because I think we've all applied several of these different tenets to our own lives and seen positive outcomes in terms of our learning habits and our ability to comprehend things. So that's step one the final step for defeating the New World Order is to be the change we want to see in ourselves, to become more conscious ourselves and infect people with that positive meme of consciousness. And, you know, it's just a matter of time before we hit critical mass.
Well, I think you've just introduced a new meme into the lexicon there with the tiptoe liberation of humanity, which is a pretty nice note on which to end things, I think. We're heading there in small stages, and all of us together are working towards the same goal. So we have to continue doing what we're doing, and all of us together will eventually reach that goal. So Jan and Paul and Rich, I thank you so much for joining me today, and it's been a fascinating conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.